This week on the Back Table Podcast.
I was telling the story of the cancer, and he came up after the show. I was like, yo, how did you know? I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I had the same thing happen to me. I was like, that's crazy. My barber just randomly, like, I told him, oh, I had cancer. He's like, I was like, ball cancer. He's like, get out, bro. Like, same. I had this, and like, so many people kind of have this same tale or have been inspired to go, like, make sure that they're taking care of themselves. So it's cool to know that there's dudes out there touching themselves because of me. thank you. Sorry, guys. But if I saved your life, you're welcome.
Hello, and welcome back to the Back Table Podcast, your source for all things urology. As a reminder, you can find previous episodes of this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and at backtable.com. I'm your host, Dr. Ruchika Talwar from Vanderbilt University Medical Center. On today's episode, we have a special guest with us in honor of Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. I'm very excited to be joined by Nimish Patel. Nimish is a comedian and Emmy-nominated writer who has risen the ranks to some of comedy's biggest stages. He's appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and has written for Saturday Night Live, The Oscars, Awkwafina, Hasan Minhaj, and many more. His 2023 special, Lucky Lefty, centered on his testis cancer diagnosis and treatment journey. I should also add that he is currently on a nationwide tour, so we really appreciate the time he's taken out to chat with us today. Nimish, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So let's dive right in. You know, we really appreciate your willingness to share your medical journey around this testis cancer diagnosis. It's something that you've talked about previously, obviously in your special and in other forums as well. So, you know, would you mind sharing with our audience, how did this all start for you?
It was probably late January, February 2022. And I was out with my sister and my wife for my birthday. We were drunk. I got in a car. An Uber, it's all in my special, but you know, to shorten it time frame wise, I was in a car and, you know, I felt a twinge in my balls. Sorry for the lack of medical terminology, but you know, what struck me was that I was drunk, and normally when you're drunk, you don't really feel pain. So this felt like a weird thing to feel pain. And I'd had a hernia like 6 years before that or something. So I knew that maybe it was a hernia and I'd been working out a lot more. So maybe I'd re-aggravated or something.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of a tour like then too. So I was like, well, a hernia I could just put off and like, I don't want to have the surgery to fix it right away. And I know it's not like life-threatening. It didn't feel life-threatening at the time. So I was like, I'll just wait. But I don't know, something about that night, I was just drunk and I was peeing. I was like, this don't feel right. Let me just go to the hospital just to see what, just in case I had torsion. Maybe it's like the start of torsion or something. Every guy knows what torsion is. Like once you're a teenager and you're jerking off too much, like, you know, everyone knows torsion. So I was like, okay, if it's torsion, I got to go. It wasn't like crippling, debilitating pain, but maybe it's like the start of torsion. So I was like, screw it. I'm awake. Let's go to the hospital. You know, the doctors, I don't recall like what the ER was like exactly, but they were like, yeah, if it's torsion, you wouldn't be able to talk. Like, you would probably be in a lot more pain than you are now. But here we are at a top medical facility. Let's just run all the tests because you have good insurance. And so they did an ultrasound, and they found, like, a mass, like an irregular mass or something. I was like, what the hell is that? I thought maybe it would be a benign cyst or something. But then the next morning, I called NYU Urology. And they were like, it's going to take 2 months to see a doctor. And I guess that's kind of standard protocol for hospitals or big medical systems. And this is something I learned from my urologist, who said it to me like kind of like just off the cuff. But like he knows, I've said a lot about healthcare before, and he knows my angle on healthcare is that it's a lot of it's too business driven. And he was just like, yeah, they just make you wait. Probably because there's more money in the chemo than there is in the surgery or whatever. I'm like, that's fucking sinister as hell, but all right. But I was like, I'm not waiting 2 months, because if this is more than just a cyst, then I want to know right away. I called my cousins. Luckily, I have a lot of doctor cousins, and they, through their connections, set me up with a urologist in New York who was able to look at the ultrasound like right away and was like, just get some blood work done just to see if it's anything more than a cyst. If it's not, then you're fine. If it is, then we can get acting on it. And I got blood work like right away. And this is like, again, within like, it was like a Tuesday or Thursday or something. And the next morning, I get the blood work ordered. The next day, I get the blood work. They expedite the results. Sunday, the doctor calls me like to wake me up. He's like, you have cancer. The blood work came back. Your HCG or whatever was elevated. And I guess in men, that's supposed to be zero because it's the human growth hormone if you have a baby in you.
I mean, you're basically a doctor at this point.
Yes, no, exactly. And so obviously I go into a little bit of shock, but like immediately, like I don't know if it's men or if it's just me or whatever it is, but I don't think about the problem necessarily, or like I don't absorb the emotion of said problem. I'm just like, all right, what do I got to do to fix it?
Yeah.
So like, luckily for me, I never really felt a real kind of sense of, oh my God, I have cancer. It was just like, okay, what do I got to do to fix this thing? I did go into a little bit of denial of like, and this is all within, again, time frame of like 72 hours. You know, the doctor's like, you have cancer, you have to have surgery. We'll call you back to schedule something within the next day or so. And so in that time frame, I was like a little bit of denial, like, could this be something else? And so I texted my cousins, one of them, you know, and she might have texted you about it. And so you all were like, yeah, no, it's cancer. But I was like, okay, what's the back of the envelope test? I went to the bodega. I got a pregnancy test. I took the pregnancy test. Sure enough, I'm having a baby, you know. and then like I Googled a little more. I was like, what could be a false positive thing?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some like the discredited information out there that says like, if you smoke a lot of weed, then maybe this HCG could get elevated or something. And like, it was my birthday weekend. So I was out and I was celebrating. I was getting high as fuck. I'd smoked like the night before the blood work, like to my face, you know. I just had a cyst on my balls. I'm like, and it's benign, probably. Let me just get it fucked up. So is that it? You know, and my mom was like, well, you know, you got to make sure that before you have this surgery that it is what they say it is.
Yeah.
And then all my doctors were like, including my cousins and the urologist, like, no, that's all nonsense. Pregnancy test plus the blood work plus the mass indicates you probably have cancer. You have to get it removed. I was like, all right. And that was really it. And then, you know, a day later, the day in between was annoying because I had to spend like all this time at the hospital to make sure paperwork is in order and get all the COVID tests and all this kind of nonsense. And then they tell you like the next day at the hospital, oh, you could have just done this from, you know, your apartment or like from a clinic nearby. You didn't have to come all the way an hour and a half outside of your apartment to do all this stuff. But regardless, like, you know, the next day surgery, it's like, I think the surgery might have been like 30 minutes or something. It was so fast.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, I was walking and eating and all that stuff. Like a day later, they had the, I don't know what the local anesthetic is, Zopridol, I don't know what it's called, but it's like in the fat and it like dissolves over 5 days. So I had no like pain in the area, and the 5 days after it wore off, like the pain would have subsided, because I was really afraid of having like hernia surgery pain.
Yeah,
because that shit sucked, and like I definitely don't want to get addicted to opioids. But the doctor was like, no, we got you, don't worry, like it's just gonna be like local, you probably just take Tylenol and ice pack. And I went to eat at an Indian restaurant. I went to Damaka for the first time ever like a day later, because we had reservations, they're impossible to get.
Yeah, you know, so you're not giving those up.
Yeah, so luckily I got to eat that, and I wore a giant ice pack on my waist and sweatpants and just went to eat. And this is all within 5 days.
Yeah, 6 days. I mean, that's the major theme I'm hearing. You're obviously on tour, you're super busy, you find this mass, and it's such a fast time period from diagnosis to surgery. And, you know, as you mentioned, even the surgery, you're like in and out. It's a lot to process. You know, how did you navigate the fact that this was all happening so quickly?
Well, you know, I was in the middle of, like, I just taped my first special, the Thank You China special. And so I joke about it on my Lucky Lefty special, but I also am serious about the joke in the sense that I was like, I had nothing to talk about. And so when this was happening, I was like, oh, all right, this is what I got to talk about for the next, like, whatever amount of time.
Yeah.
And maybe skipping ahead to another question you may have, but like, because my line of work is literally just talking about things happening to me or things that I'm observing, by just being on stage with it all the time and just like making funny out of all the things that were happening, I kind of like gave myself exposure therapy by just immediately talking about it and writing it down. Just like, even the notes that I was taking about the things that were happening were a way of processing it without like letting any real woe is me emotion kind of take hold. And I was also cognizant of the fact that this is, it was nuts how I was very grateful, no pun intended. Like, it was, I was very grateful that, hey, you know, my cousins were super fast with the response times and all that stuff. But like, how quickly I was able to move through it, I was very cognizant of the fact that I was, you know, in a very abnormal time frame, right? Like, a lot of people would have had to wait those 2 months to get a follow-up ultrasound to see if that mass grew. When I woke up, like, after that hospital visit, literally 5 hours later, on the phone with a cousin, literally 2 hours later, on the phone with the urologist, literally 24 hours after that, getting blood work done. And then 24 hours after that, being told I had cancer. So I'm very cognizant, I was very fortunate. And at the same time, I was like, oh, yes, here's the new material. Like, I got this. And so that was it, really. Like, there was, like, I joked that I didn't have time to process it, but I was just processing it as it was happening, because it was happening so quickly. And because I have the line of work that makes me make sure that I write everything down and process it as it's happening.
Yeah.
That's how I was able to process it so quickly, because it was happening so quick, even though it was happening so quick.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned how, you know, the if there is a silver lining here, the silver lining was all of this great content for your next special. But, you know, I'm just wondering, was there any hesitation in sharing such a personal story?
I thought about it a little bit, about like, more from an audience perspective, like, who the fuck wants to hear about someone's balls for 45 minutes or an hour? And it's like,
only like, an audience of urologists. That's it.
Yeah, listen, if you have some urology conferences coming up with big budgets, let me know. I'm willing and able to do them. Like, I think my story would kill. My urologist seems to think so. He was at the taping of the special and had a great time, and is, you know, a fan for life, so to speak. But there was a hesitation from that perspective of like, who the fuck wants to hear about this for like that long? And when I read the reviews of like shows that I'd done on tour after that, like, there was definitely some of that. Like, people had he just joked about his balls for 40 minutes. Like, and it was like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I what do you want me to talk about? And it was also a hesitation from like, do I want to talk about this for 45 minutes? Not from like a shame or anything perspective, but just from the artistic perspective of like, who the fuck cares? Like, I don't care. I've already processed it like a billion times. Now I got, now I got to like relive the story so many times. And honestly, like, I was going to say no to this if you were not one of my cousin's friends. Like, you know, people have asked me to do their podcast about my balls. Yeah. It was like, no, I don't give a shit. I talked about it. Go watch the special, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was the hesitation. And there's also like maybe a little hesitation from perspective of, anytime you share a story like this, it, part of me is like, I maybe I'm being perceived as a victim. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I want to be at all. I don't feel a victim by any of this. I am very, whatever the opposite of victim is in this sense, because like, look how quickly everything got happened to me. And this is the luck of the draw sometimes that you get ball cancer. But if anything, this is like proof that I'm the opposite of victim, and how quickly this all kind of transpired and went away from me and what it turned into, you know? And so that was a little hesitation, maybe subconsciously, but I knew I had to talk about it because A, I had nothing else to talk about. B, like, if there was any hesitation, it was just from artistic perspective of, once I talk about it, I'm done talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care anymore about it. Like, and that's just with any jokes. Like, I'm just like, all right, I said it 3 times. It's funny. I know it works. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. You know, that's just like the nature of my stand-up, at least. And then hesitation from the audience perspective. But I know I had to do it because I had nothing else to talk about for a while. And it was also a little bit like, can I do this? Like, can I make 45 minutes of stand-up from one story? And I think I was able to do that pretty well, and, you know, learned a lot about the comedy process and myself in the process. So worth it overall.
You know, of course, we appreciate you being here. And the big reason that I reached out, you know, despite the fact that I've known about your story for a little bit of time, and I did, you know, catch wind of your special, but especially lately, I had a few patients who brought up the fact that they did self-checks and noticed these things from, you know, your content, from other people out there who are having these honest conversations. So I really commend you for that. I mean, obviously, comedy is comedy, but at the same time, when you're able to really weave in this important message, you know, you mentioned it in your special, there's a lot of awareness out there for breast cancer, for prostate cancer, for colon, you know, for other cancers. And this is just not a conversation that we had that much up until recently. You know, so I think from that perspective, in addition to making people laugh, you know, you really made a difference.
Well, thank you. I hope so. You know, I've gotten messages, you know, a few, not a lot, but a few of like people, oh man, like I checked myself. Thank you. Like one or two people being like, hey, I got this mass. Should I go to the hospital? Like, I'm not a doctor. Go to the hospital, bro. But, you know, just people, you know, saying like, oh, thank you for this. Like it helped. And then there's been like a lot of people in the shows who've been like, that same thing happened to me. Like, I'm like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. Like, I won't forget it. I was in Dania Beach, Florida, and I was talking to, I randomly just started talking to some guy in the crowd. No idea who he was. He was just on a date with some very attractive woman. And I just started talking to them. And I was telling the story of the cancer, and he came up after the show. I was like, yo, how did you know? I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I had the same thing happen to me. I was like, that's crazy. My barber just randomly, like, I told him, oh, I had cancer. He's like, I was like, ball cancer. He's like, get out, bro. Like, same. I had this, and like so many people kind of have this same tale or have been inspired to go like make sure that they're taking care of themselves. So it's cool to know that there's dudes out there touching themselves because of me. thank you. Sorry, guys. But if I saved your life, you're welcome.
Yeah. And you know, you were cured with orchiectomy alone. And that is the story for many men out there. Thankfully, even for those men who need extra treatments, like additional chemotherapy or surgery, survival rates are really high. You know, but that's not entirely the whole story. We've certainly had more of a focus on cancer survivorship, given these kinds of conversations that we're having. You know, those are more common, they're encouraged. And, you know, I without wanting to harp on this, because I know you've already said the fact that you're not a victim and you've sort of put this behind you, but I'm sure in some ways it comes up. Like, how do you navigate sort of just life after a cancer diagnosis in general?
You know, like, it has made me, from a personal perspective, just made me a little bit more hypochondriac-y, I guess. like my lungs are tight. Has it spread? You know, but I put that to rest pretty easily. Like, when you put yourself out there the way I did, like, there's always going to be people who will take that as an opportunity to make jokes and stuff. And it's just like, yeah, that, like, I have a very thick skin, and I would not have, you know, made myself so open and so vulnerable had I not been able to handle all of it. But then for the most part, people are just like, hey, a lot of people don't even know, nor do people care. And it's just like, yeah, it should happen to you. Like, people get into accidents all the time and no one's making fun. Like, luckily, like, for better or for worse, it is pretty funny. Like, I don't, like, maybe it's just funny because, like, so many dudes, like, usually funny or comedy is a defense mechanism for something that people find, like, a weak point about themselves and will be self-deprecating about it so that it makes it hurt less when other people are that way. So I think, in general, men find ball stuff funny because they themselves see that as a vulnerability. And so luckily, like, it's just generally accepted as funny. And it's just like, if you can own it, that's the best you can do. Like, that's all that I've taken it as. No one's like a real asshole. And even if they are, it's like, all right, I don't really care. There's something worse going on in their life. Probably, maybe, or they're just an asshole for whatever reason. But like post-diagnosis, it's just like, yeah, it is what it is. Like, I am fortunate that, you know, I was treated quickly. I didn't have to go through, I'm sure a lot of people have it a lot worse than I do, in the sense of like follow-up treatments and all that kind of stuff, however taxing those are physically and mentally. Like, I'm fortunate that I haven't had to feel those effects, but I kind of sympathize with those people that have to do a lot more. But yeah, navigating it post-diagnosis has just been putting myself out there. I kind of like 8 Mile to myself in the M&M scene. Like, I just put everything out there.
Yeah.
Like before anyone could do anything, it's like, all right, what are you going to say now kind of thing. And so that was that. It hasn't been tough for me, luckily. I'm sure it's tough for some people, but I think from a mental perspective, it's just been like, yeah, this is something that happened to me. I moved on from it. I'm good. Like, I'm just grateful for the way things are now, you know?
You know, in this podcast, we tend to focus a lot on urological care from the physician perspective, because this is really, Backtable really is a series for practicing urologists. But it's super important that we consider the patient experience, especially given the fact that this is like young men, young people who don't necessarily have experience with the healthcare system before this. And again, as we've referenced, it's a sensitive topic. It's a sensitive area. So what advice do you have for us as physicians and clinicians as we care for testis cancer patients?
I think what my physician, what my urologist, if he's listening, shout out Dr. Larsh, what he did exceptionally well was make it seem kind of normal that anyone that's coming to him has had this problem or a similar problem or sometimes an even worse problem. And I think that was one thing he did exceptionally well, was just like, yeah, this is par for the course for a lot of people. I think a lot of it is just like shame a little bit. And that might just be also from like the physical sense of like, oh, I got to show another grown person that is not in my love life, my dick and balls. And it's just like, but once you get over that, like from a physician's perspective, I think like just without being patronizing, you know, like that's also, as a guy, I might be an exception, but I think like most guys are like, they become defensive in a scenario where they're literally, their masculinity is under threat. So I just knew what it was. I was like, yeah, okay, this is, I just have to accept this. This is what it's going to be. But I think as long as you can not patronize, you'll be fine. And also, there was also like other steps in the process. I talked about it in the special, but you know, like when they prep you for surgery, like they shave you, but it's not supposed to happen when you're awake. It happened to me when I was awake and I was just like, what the fuck is going on? It just doesn't seem right at all. So I think like probably just a slight miscommunication there. So I think it's just like clearly delineating the steps. And that wasn't on him. That wasn't on my urologist. That was on the hospital staff, I think, the non-MD people that were involved in the other steps of it all. And I think they just miscommunicated when something was supposed to happen, because I think there's a nursing shortage and that the cath lab nurse had come to shave me because, and they thought they do it when you're awake because in the cath lab, the patients are awake. So
yeah.
But beyond that, I think just like the maintaining, like the almost normalcy of it all was key for me. Like the energy that the physician puts out is the same energy that the patient might have. And like, definitely like the people surrounding the patient, luckily, like he was bedside manner 10 on 10. And that just meant like making it seem like this is all kind of standard. I was in good hands, like just making sure that I didn't let the anxiety of what could happen take over, you know, like has it spread? Like none of that was in my thought process because the doctor was so calm and composed about it all.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think you bring up a couple important points, though. Like there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to getting in an office, seeing somebody, getting an ultrasound, getting blood work, you not knowing, for example, that you could have had your preoperative stuff done way closer to home. And, you know, the prepping process before surgery, you know, we certainly as physicians need to do a good job of making sure you know exactly what to expect and how we can sort of ease this already difficult journey. But, you know, I'm so glad that your urologist seemed to have the best demeanor and you both connected well, because I think that's a really important piece of this, too. You know, especially in with this kind of cancer, you want to make sure you feel comfortable. You feel comfortable being open about what you're feeling, how you're recovering, and, you know, if any symptoms pop up later.
Yeah, I think that was the most kind of important thing, like making sure I could be like, hey, even after surgery, like, hey, like this still hurts or this doesn't work or I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And just keeping that line of communication open for as long as it needed to be open so that I felt, again, like in good hands. There was never a moment where I was unable to reach them and just touch base about what was happening, what I was feeling or whatever. And he was also aware of what the underlying emotions might be without being like patronizing about it all. you know, just be like, hey, this, you might feel this way about yourself afterwards, or some patients feel this way or that way, like scientifically, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
patients become depressed. Some patients undergo like bouts of like self-doubt and all that kind of stuff. And he's just like kind of made that stuff clear, which helped mitigate, again, like kind of normalize that these are things that everyone experiences. So don't feel bad that you feel this way. Like, it's normal to feel this way. Here's what you do to kind of not put a stop to it, but understand that for yourself.
Yeah, super important. And not be alarmed by it. Again, get rid of the shame if those feelings come up. So I think that's a great point. You know, as we sort of wrap up here, I wanted to just ask, what advice do you have for men out there who might be, you know, facing a diagnosis of testis cancer, or even facing that twinge down there that you experienced?
Look, there's no shame in getting help. You know, and my cousin texted me, one of my cousins that I texted about the cancer in the first place, texted me like, a healthy man worries about a million things. You know, a sick man worries about one. It's like their health, right? It's like, if you can focus on that, like, if you feel something in your body is wrong, like, go get checked out. It's easy to say, I have very good insurance and cousins and all that kind of shit, but like, at the end of the day, like, it's important to take care of yourself. And I think a lot of masculinity and manhood is just tied to like taking care of yourself and like, I don't need anybody to fix me kind of thing. And it's like, that's kind of, and all things are fine, other things are more important, like I got work and this and that. And I'm again saying this from hindsight, and because I definitely, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, like I thought it was a hernia, I was just going to put it off. And so I definitely was in that, you know, mindset myself. But at some point I was like, no, this could be a problem, let me go get it fixed. There's no shame in kind of seeking help. And, you know, if you've already gone through the process, like, I can't be prescriptive from an emotional perspective, but I can tell you that writing about it helps a lot. And if you can, get on stage about it. But, you know, I wouldn't make, well, maybe I would. Maybe your first open mic set is about your balls. It'd be pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean, just, like, process it however you process it that doesn't involve alcohol and drugs. Like, definitely just write about it and think about what your emotions are going through, and that's for like anything really, but specifically this, like, it's what helped me. So
yeah, and for you it was comedy and writing, and for others it may be something else. But I think that's a really important point to just, you know, normalize the things that are happening. You're not the only one out there. Again, it's not a cancer that gets as much attention as some of the other more, you know, I hesitate to use the word mainstream, but it's true. We see a lot out there, a lot of commercials about breast cancer, you know, colon cancer, all of that. You know, thanks to you doing episodes like this, but also, you know, your entire special, we're starting to get a little more attention on this really important topic.
Last thing I'll say is, and this might be a bit of caveat, but I just, like, I was really hesitant to talk about it with my friends, A, because I was talking about it on stage, but it can be a real bummer at the bar. I would say don't make it your personality for sure. I think there's some people that can do that, and no one wants to hang out with that person. That's why I think it's important to find almost an outlet, whether it be a support group or some shit, like, that you can kind of bracket it for yourself.
Yeah.
Because I was conscious of not making it the only thing I talked about for a while. It is, like, a very, quote unquote, interesting thing that have happened to you, because it's, like, it's so many people can relate to having a health scare. And so I was always just like, let me just talk about it on stage for a while and then talk about it to my journal and what have you. And that's why I think, like, it's so important to have, like, an outlet that isn't kind of like trauma dumping on your friends, but rather just like processing it on your own before you either bring it to the world or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nimish. We really appreciate your time and you sharing your story. For anyone who's interested in watching Nimish's special, it was from 2023, Lucky Lefty, and we'll be sure to link it in the show notes.
Please. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks to our audience for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe, rate the podcast 5 stars, and share with a friend.
If you have any questions or comments, DM us at _backtable on Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter.
Backtable is hosted by Aditya Bagrodia
and Jose Silva.
Our audio team is led by Kieran Gannon, with support from
Josh McWhirter,
Aaron Bowles,
Nick Shellcross,
Josh Spencer.
Design and digital marketing led by Brian Schmitz.
Social media and PR by Chi Ding.
Administrative support provided by Jim Lee Kinnebrew.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.